Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats. Darren Pritchett is enjoying an extended weekend with some things to take care of this weekend. We've got South Bend Cubs baseball, a first pitch from Dayton coming up at 7 o'clock. Brendan King will have the pregame show and the call of tonight's game beginning at 6:45 here on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader. A lot to get to today, roughly maybe 20 minutes or so after the show ended last night. Notre Dame football got another verbal commitment. It is a running back. Eric Hansen and I will talk about that. Tyler James will join me for the second hour. We'll talk about it then as well. The NBA draft last night. A couple Notre Dame players, unfortunately, did not hear their names called. We'll talk about that. Also a tidbit from Eric Hansen's latest IndyInsider.com notebook. It features Tavon Coney in the headline, but it is a notebook, so don't be fooled. There's a lot of stuff in there, including something about incoming freshman quarterback Phil Jurkovec, and we will get to that. Also, 71 days to go till the start of the Notre Dame football season, so who's number 71? We'll talk about him in here in a few minutes. Las Vegas Superbook. The odds for Notre Dame and some other teams, including Michigan, to win a national championship. SB nominations came out this week. Notre Dame women's basketball is up for 3 ESPYs, and Eric Hansen and I will try to predict which ones maybe Notre Dame won or ones. The Notre Dame women have the best chance to win. Also, Mike Elston joined us for Football 101 here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat last week. And we will let you hear that interview with Mike Elston, the associate head coach of the Fighting Irish football team and defensive line coach. A lot of good stuff with him, so you'll hear that at the end of this hour. And then again, Tyler James joins me for the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tonight. We'll get even more in-depth with the recruiting news and all the commitments the Irish have had. 2 of them this week, both on the offensive side of the football. And Indy Insider Eric Hansen is with me, and you finally got that magazine put to bed. It's off to the printers, huh?
It is off to the, it's at the printers, and they are going to have it back to us a week from today.
And then it'll hit the newsstands.
And it'll hit the newsstands shortly thereafter, and I'm very, very proud of this edition, and it is, I think people are going to really like it.
Excellent. So we have that to look forward to next week with, is it the Indy Insider magazine? Is that?
It's called Indy Insider 2018.
Okay.
Notre Dame Football Preview. It's a long name.
But it says everything right in the title.
Yes, it does.
You can find it, all kinds of good stuff. And I know that for the magazine, you try to kind of work some different angles and things like that you don't get to necessarily cover with the paper.
We do, and I think it's nice because you get some pretty good access. You know, I got to spend some time with Jerry Tillery. I haven't done that other than, 8,000 people around with me all kind of firing questions at him. It was nice to spend some one-on-one time with him, so one of my stories is on that. Did a story on quarterback development, which I think people are going to really enjoy. DeShone Kizer, Brady Quinn were voices in that, along with Brian Kelly and Chip Long, and just how Notre Dame is kind of reconfiguring its player development model or quarterback development model, and what are the important pieces, and how this might benefit Brandon Wimbush. Mike Varell has some really good pieces. Tyler did one with Jamie Ann Franklin, who did a stem cell transplant with his dad. He's a freshman defensive tackle. saved his dad's life, who had leukemia. There's a lot of really cool stuff in there, position breakdowns and looking at opponents and all that good stuff. And a lot of cool stuff with our freshman profiles. We ask them kind of like fun questions. And I got a 20 questions with Brian Kelly where we ask bizarre questions too. And it was pretty funny. One of his answers, I asked him, I said, when was the last time that you had a honeydew project that you actually did? And when he was describing it, it sounded more like he was supervising other people doing the projects, but I gave him credit. He goes, well, I cleaned a couple stains off of chairs. Right. Okay.
It still had to be done.
Yeah. But it sounded like his oldest son was doing most of the work, cleaning the boat. And, you know.
Good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff. All right. So we've got that to look forward to coming out in a week, the Indy Insider 2018 football edition. All right, so let's get to some of this news. Three-star running back Kyren Williams committed to the Irish last night. He's 5'10", 201 pounds, from Missouri, and he visited Notre Dame during the 2016 Virginia Tech game, also came back for Irish Invasion last June, returned for Junior Day in January, so he's been here quite a bit. And according to South Bend Tribune, Indy recruiting insider Tyler James, Williams has experience at running back, wide receiver, and defensive back. In his junior season, he rushed 119 times, 922 yards, 22 touchdowns. So a pretty good ratio there. Also caught 51 passes for 774 yards, 12 touchdowns, and also recorded 37 tackles, 4 interceptions. 24/7 Sports has Williams as the number 19 running back in the class, while Rivals ranks him as the number 34 athlete, which of course means he can play multiple positions. And with Notre Dame recruiting Williams as a running back, he's become the lone offensive skill player in the 2019 class, which now includes 15 members. The other 4 offensive players are all linemen, including one earlier this week. So, Eric, just some of your thoughts on the Irish getting a commit from a running back.
Well, he definitely fits what Chip Long wants to do with the offense. I had a chance to sit down with him during kind of our magazine prep work time. And the one thing that Notre Dame wasn't able to do last year a lot because of injuries to certain running backs was they didn't throw to their backs much, and they didn't take advantage of the versatility of some of their players in terms of formation and play calls. Mm-hmm. Chip likes running backs who can catch the ball. He'd love to have Theo Riddick, for example. Right. That would be kind of the prototype running back that he's looking for, a guy that can run between the tackles but also catch the ball. You can do a lot of things formationally, get some bad matchups for the defense because of those kind of skill sets. So Kyren Williams fits this, and I think that's probably the best thing about him. I know Tom Lemming told Tyler he's a terrific all-around athlete. He's small for a running back, but he can be an all-purpose back that fits into the spread offense where he can run and catch. He has really good hands. He's an elite player. So Tom's higher on him than some of the other recruiting services. And again, I think some of what maybe tamped down his ranking is when he plays in St. Louis, which is not an area that gets a ton of exposure. The other is, he was this guy that had a lot of receiving yards, played a lot of wide receiver, mm-hmm. a lot of rushing yards, but it wasn't monster numbers that you see for a running back. So, you know, I think this is a good pickup. I think they probably could use another running back that's bigger in this class, but I think this is a guy that Notre Dame's happy to have.
Those things you mentioned about the matchups and Chip Long and his history with running backs, if you look back at Memphis and when he was at Arizona State, there was a lot more of that, the running backs catching passes that we didn't see last year. So that also kind of, when you look at Avery Davis and Jafar Armstrong, who we saw back there in the spring, would seem to maybe kind of portend that we're going to see a lot more of that in the offense.
Right, and a healthy Tony Jones Jr., they believe he has that skill set too. So there's three. You know, when Tony Jones got hurt last year, I mean, Josh Adams was okay at catching the ball. He didn't have a lot of career catches. Not kind of the guy that that is good with that. You get it in space. Josh Adams' strength was breaking long runs.
Right.
And Dexter Williams, he was okay with that. I mean, I saw him in practice. Dexter could beat you deep. He didn't have kind of that swing pass skill set where he catches it and then he makes you miss and then takes off. I think he can get better at that, and I think he worked at that in the spring. So when Tony Jones got hurt, you know, Deion McIntosh wasn't really that kind of guy. C.J. Holmes was, but they didn't start using him until October. And then, again, it was kind of hard to work him in there. So, you know, Chip felt like he was a little bit hamstrung with his play calls and the playbook. But I said, is that going to be a problem this year? He goes, oh, no. because he feels like even if one or two of those guys get injured, he's got enough of them where he can say, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is who we're going to be. I think the offense in several ways is going to look different than it did last year. I think the tight ends are going to be more prominent as well. I really look for them to be more featured this year.
I would think so as well, just based on some of the things we saw in the spring, and you just look at the potential for Wright and Komet and Mac, and I just the whole group of them would seem like we're going to see a lot more of that this year. All right, now the other thing that I mentioned from Eric's IndyInsider.com notebook, and again, if you see it at IndyInsider.com, it's kind of starts off focused about Tavon Coney and his court appearance and his plea and all that stuff that came up this week, but it is a notebook, so there are other things in there as well, and something interesting in there is something that Brian Kelly said about incoming freshman quarterback Phil Jurkovec, and the quote from Brian Kelly, he's going to play. You hope you have some situations where your lead is out of reach. You can put him in those situations. He's going to get some very valuable experience. In fact, I told all our freshmen when they came in for summer school, be ready to play this year, end quote. And again, that's from Brian Kelly. And of course, this goes back to the rule that the NCAA passed last year that ups the number of...
Just really recently, not last year.
Last week, I'm sorry, not last year.
Yeah,
yeah, just last week.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
But... So that's what it goes back to is the redshirt number. You can play four games and still be able to redshirt. And so Brian Kelly sounds like he's going to take full advantage of that, Eric.
You know, it's one of those rules where you say, why didn't they do this earlier? At the American Football Coaches Association, they pass things now. It doesn't, and then they recommend it to the NCAA. So when they pass something, it's like you and I voting on something. It's not going anywhere. But they passed it unanimously, and it's a game changer. Now, you can't go retroactively say, if you're a junior, and say, well, when I was a freshman, I only played in two games. Can I get that year back? No, you can't. This is starting now for red shirts, and you don't have to be a freshman. For people that aren't familiar with the rule, prior to this, if you didn't get injured during your red shirt season, you're trying to red shirt, if you played one play, that burned a year of eligibility. Yeah. And it literally was not that much. It was a handful of plays that did in Kona Schwenke. Kona Schwenke really benefit from a fifth year. But his first year, his freshman year, he had to come in because Stephon Tuitt was suspended.
Right.
Ethan Johnson got injured. They needed him to play a few downs, and that burned a year of eligibility for him. As far as injuries, you used to be able to play up to three games, but they all had to be in the first half of the season. That injury had to happen that limited your play to the first half of the season. For example, Greg Bryant was able to take a medical redshirt, even though he had played in a couple of games. So this is a great rule. It would have probably changed the trajectory of Brandon Wimbush's career. He only played in two games as a freshman.
Right.
So he could have taken that as his redshirt year,
not sat out the next year,
played as a sophomore instead of being on scout team, and been a little bit more ready to be a starter last year.
Yeah, would have been a lot different. But we will see him. We will see Phil Jurkovec, and who knows who else we'll see out there.
Well,
this year,
and talking to both Chip and Brian, I'm not sure that anybody's not going to play in any games unless they're injured. I think they're going to try to get people in games just to get them the experience and take advantage of this, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, Chip mentioned there, you know, in November where the roster's kind of wearing down, you've got guys with fresh legs.
Exactly.
Especially on special teams. Yeah. Why not get them in the last four games of the season?
Right.
Yeah.
Get you a lot of opportunities to get those guys, because it gets them, as you said, one, guys are losing their legs a little bit, and two, by mid-season, you would hope that a lot of these freshmen are coming up to speed and maybe they're more ready. So it's kind of a perfect situation. And then you throw in what we've talked about with Notre Dame's schedule and all that kind of stuff with all the road games at the end. That could be big for them.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific rule. And again, you're less apt to play somebody that's kind of borderline injured. You can play now a freshman and get them in and save that guy's body that's injured a little bit. I don't see, well, I guess we'll have to wait to see, but I don't see a downside with this rule at all.
Nope, doesn't seem like it, at least right now anyway. It is 22 minutes after 5 o'clock. He's Eric Hansen, South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame football insider. I'm Sean Stiers, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We will take a timeout when we come back. We have some of that SB talk and a little more Notre Dame football as well. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Also brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club, by Goshen Health System, Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartandVascular.org. And by Ivy Court Inn and Suites, with convenient and unique meeting spaces. You're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues right after this. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat, along with Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen of the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Stiers. Tyler James joins me for the second hour of the show tonight. We'll get into some more recruiting. Eric, before we get into some of this SB stuff, 71 days to go till the start of the Notre Dame football season. That, of course, number 71, Alex Barrs. So just some of your thoughts on Alex, kind of how he's developed the past couple years and what you expect to see from him here this coming up season as he moves to Leopard.
Well, I know when Alex came in, they looked at him at left tackle first, and he redshirted that year. And I know that Harry at that point, Harry Hiestand, who's now with the Chicago Bears, offensive line coach, thought Alex as a freshman came in with technical skills that you don't see with a freshman in terms of just everything that he did from a technique standpoint. Now, what he didn't have behind that was the oomph. He didn't have the strength that upperclassmen had, and maybe a little bit of the knowledge of the playbook and things like that. But they were really excited about him. And then he started moving around the line, you know, based on need.
Right.
If you remember his redshirt freshman year, he battled Quentin Nelson kind of down to the end for that left guard spot, and Quentin won out. And again, it was kind of Quentin's brute strength and showing an aptitude of getting better in the technical aspects versus a technician who didn't have the brute strength. So Quentin won that battle. So then Alex pops over, and he's a right tackle, kind of out of necessity, moves into guard, flips over to left guard this year. I think he's Notre Dame's best lineman, and I think he has a chance to be drafted. I don't know that he would be a first-round type of guy because he's a guard, and Quentin Nelson is an exception to the rule. There's not a lot of guards that get drafted in the first round, but he's a guy that's going to get drafted, and I think he's a guy that's going to be, people are going to say, boy, he's a really good player. I don't know that you're going to see the highlight reel. I mean, nobody makes highlight reels of guards, but when you watched Quentin Nelson, it was really entertaining. But he's a guy, again, that I think is going to be really good at the next level, because he's going to, Matt Bayless is a, coming to Notre Dame was the best thing that happened to Alex Barrs, because it's helping him add that strength element. Not that he was a weak guy, but brutal strength element, brute strength element to a guy that's a tremendous technician.
All right, very well. So that's Alex Barrs, and again, 71 days till the start of the football season. You're going to be taking off here pretty soon.
You're going
on vacation. By the time you get back, we're going to be down to like, what, less than 30 days, I think.
We're going to be getting ready to, Notre Dame's going to be getting ready to start training camp. I guess that's will too.
That's right.
We will be getting ready to watch it.
That's right.
So sweating, I have to prepare my eyes.
Absolutely. Okay. Notre Dame women's basketball nominated for 3 ESPYs this week. The ESPY Awards handed out by ESPN, of course. And after that after winning their national championship in April. So let's go through them. They're nominated for Best Team, and essentially all the major championship winners of the year are up for Best Team. Notre Dame women's basketball, the Houston Astros, Philadelphia Eagles, USA women's gold medal hockey team, Villanova men's basketball, Golden State Warriors, and the Washington Capitals. So what kind of chances would you give them to
okay,
win this
game? Who votes on that?
Now, see, this I'm not sure because two of them, I don't know if it's ESPN people or other media members. I'll see if I can find out here.
Or the Academy.
But yeah, that's right. I'd like to thank the Academy. Because there's one, the best play, which Arike Ogunbowale is up for. There's 16 different plays, but fans can actually vote for that one. So
okay. So on this, you know, if they all play the same, you know, it's hard to make a college team of any beat a pro team. But when you think about the story of the Notre Dame women's basketball and just being down to 7 scholarship players and all those comeback victories, I think that puts them in the thick of things. I think probably the Eagles are going to end up winning that just kind of based on their story and winning the Super Bowl and so forth. You know, Golden State Warriors and the Washington Capitals, I mean, the Capitals, they're all good stories, but I think Notre Dame women's basketball is a chance, but I would think one of the pro teams, especially the Eagles, would win that.
You know what? I'm sitting here right now. I went to the website, and on each of them, on each of the because it only says for best play that the fans can vote, but on each of these different categories, they have the nominees up there, and you can click on them. So it looks like you can actually vote for all of them.
And I don't know how much of the fan vote, because when I got sucked into watching Arike and Dancing with the Stars, I can't believe how silly America is on some of its voting.
That's very true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there was one, I think it was last season or the year before, someone who was a really good dancer, got good scores from the judges and all that stuff, but got booted because there weren't enough people voting for. So there's always that kind of little controversy that comes up in those.
Well, Food Network star on the Food Network.
I'm watching that as well.
Okay. They, a couple years ago, America was voting, and they voted this one dude in that never had a show or whatever because they found some old tapes of him making terrible remarks about women and other people. And so he never got a show. And you could tell that the judges and the mentors weren't real happy that this guy won. America, dropped the ball. So they took back that from America. I think that's probably the best way to go.
Good way to do it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I agree with what you were saying. I mean, like when you look at it, it's a really good story. But I think that one of the pro teams or maybe even the hockey team might have a better chance just because there's more sort of general sort of interest in that.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's down to America's vote, those, you know, NFL is the most popular sport, so that's going to get a lot
but
of votes.
But do Eagles fans care enough to vote? I mean, they like to go and jeer and do all their stuff.
Yeah. They're just going to go and make bad comments about the other teams on the website.
That's right. Best moment, Arike Ogunbowale's buzzer beater to beat Mississippi State for the national championship is up there. Of course, she also hit the buzzer beater to beat UConn in the national semifinal. The other 3 nominees, there are only 3 for this one. The Vikings beating the Saints in the NFC divisional playoffs. That was the one where Stephon Diggs went 61 yards with no time on the clock for the game-winning touchdown. The Golden Knights going to the Stanley Cup final as an expansion team is on there. And the other one is 16 seed UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, beating number 1 Virginia, the only 16 seed to beat a number 1 seed. Now I look at that, and again, the NFL being popular, but I don't know sort of how many people would vote for that Vikings catch. I mean,
it wasn't in a Super Bowl.
Right.
I saw all the plays except for, or the moments except for the Golden Knights going to the Stanley Cup. I didn't watch that their clenching game. But
Darren
Darren
would be very upset.
Yeah, but I saw all the other things. That if we're just in this one, I think it's easily Arike because she did it in back-to-back games, and because Notre Dame wasn't favored in either game, and because they had to come from so far behind in both games.
True.
I just think that was
and the
amazing.
Whole thing went viral after it happened as well.
And she got on the cover of Sports Illustrated and all the other things that came with it. The Vikings play was cool. I mean, that was shocking. But, again, the Vikings didn't win the next week if they had been the Super Bowl champs. Had the Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup, then I'd say give it to them. And the 16th seed, that's amazing to beat Virginia. But, again, they didn't go on and win other games. So, Arike, to me, is the easy winner there. But that doesn't mean I'm predicting that. That's who I think should get it. I don't know what the SB Academy is doing. So
that's right. Now, this last one, there are 16 plays that are nominated for best play. Agumba Wale, the same buzzer beater by Agumba Wale, the same Stephon Diggs Minnesota Vikings catch, the Philly special, Eagles fool the Patriots with a fourth down touchdown toss to quarterback Nick Foles, Alabama winning the national championship on a 41-yard overtime touchdown pass, and then you have there's a play from the Women's
College
World
Series. Who threw that pass? I just want to hear you say Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa.
Okay.
To Devontae Smith. And then there's even some high school plays on here. There's some soccer plays. I went through, and of the 16, I have seen six of them. There's a USA hockey team, the women's hockey team, Jocelyn Lamoro Davidson scoring the shootout winner to secure the gold. The Greek Freak, I still don't know how to say his actual name correctly, but he leapfrogged dunks on Tim Hardaway Jr. That's pretty impressive. So there are 16 different plays on the best play. So there's a lot to beat out. But again, Arike Agumba Wale essentially nominated for two of them, and the Notre Dame women's basketball team also nominated for best team. So just to be like in consideration for one of these, when you consider how this cuts through all sports, professional all the way down to high school level, is pretty cool that they're nominated for three of these.
I think it's pretty cool that Arike Ogunbowale isn't either the hardest to pronounce or hardest to spell on that list.
That's right. That's a very good point. And maybe it's fitting that she's from up there in Milwaukee because you've got the Greek Freak whose name I can't pronounce who plays for the Milwaukee Bucks. All right, with Eric Hansen, I'm Sean Stiers. Coming up next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, we'll hear that interview with Fighting Irish associate head football coach and of course, the defensive line coach, Mike Elston. We talked to him last week at Football 101. Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I. And we'll get that next as Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. 5:43 on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. South Bend Cubs baseball pregame coming up in about an hour on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with South Bend Tribune, Indy football insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Stiers. Last week at Football 101 over at Notre Dame, Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I got the chance to talk to Notre Dame associate head football coach and defensive line coach Mike Elston. Let's take you back to that right now.
I'm kind of curious, just being involved in baseball, read a lot of books on the analytics of baseball.
Right.
I'm kind of anti-pitcher wins now. I'm anti-batting average. I'm more about on-base percentage. So the analytics has kind of changed my way of thinking. How has it affected you as a coach? And can you offer an idea of maybe a set of numbers that you look for after a game?
Well, you know, that's a great question because analytically, everything now with offense and defense and really decisions that relates to the game, the flow of the game, a third down call, a second down call is all based on analytics. And the way that it's affected football is now there's a full-time staffer that's actually, for the course of the week, giving reports to Brian Kelly about how the analytics for that game impact play calling both offensively and defensively. And not to bore you with all of them, but, you know, end of the game scenarios, third down scenarios. Brian Kelly is on the phone with the analytics guy, and a year ago that was Jeff Quinn, and Jeff did a phenomenal job. And outcomes of games were determined by, you know, analyzing that situation and then making a call that was maybe not what you would normally make because you didn't have the analytics before. But now everything for us with play calling, and not, I shouldn't say everything, but a good percentage of it, we can, you know, make better calls based on the analytics that we find.
Coach, I have to, before I get into the really serious questions,
it's going to have to do with cookies.
The chocolate chip cookies, when you would, you know, Kurt Heinisch, you know, how did your development come? Chocolate chip cookies, Beth Elston's chocolate chip cookies.
The sack the quarterback cookies.
Okay.
So here's how it began.
Okay, right.
When we would get a sack, my wife would make a sack of cookies for the guys.
Okay.
And so she got this recipe from Neiman Marcus. So I don't know if you know the story about Neiman Marcus.
No.
But what ended up happening was a young lady walked in and she wanted the Neiman Marcus recipe. She said, put it on my account. She gets her account bill and it's like $500. And so she called Neiman Marcus and said, hey, that's too expensive. I didn't realize, you guys said five. I thought you meant $5. It was $500. So they didn't give her money back because she already had the recipe. So she said, I'll do you one better. I'm going to post this online. So anyway, the recipe got posted online. My wife found it like, whatever, 15 years ago, and she's been making it ever since. And they're knockout. I'll bring you one. I'm going to bring you one because if I bring you like five, you're going to eat all five of them.
Okay, you're right. And so, I don't need that.
And I don't mean it because your size. I mean because they're that good.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, she makes them for the guys, and she used to do it for the guys that just sacked the quarterback. Now it's a ritual on Friday. She hands them to them in the morning, and they love them.
And do you like the cookies?
I love them.
Okay.
Oh, they're phenomenal. They're all around my waistline and my hips, so I got to stop eating them. But yeah, I love them.
Okay, serious question. We were talking a little bit earlier about defensive line depth and defensive line prowess, and I said, we were talking about position groups, and I said, boy, if I could be sure, if I were drinking the Kool-Aid, I would say the defensive line might be the best position group on this team. I never thought three years ago I would say that.
Yeah. To stop you there, I would agree with you.
Okay.
I believe I love the energy we're practicing with. I love the momentum that we have. I mean, I can't give them enough. They're always in my office. They're always down in the video room. It's a special group of guys, and I'm excited to this weekend add the three incoming freshmen because I think they're going to add great depth. They're the same kind of workers these guys are, and I'm very excited about next fall for our defensive line.
I think the two edge guys are the most intriguing to me because you kind of look at them and you say they could be right on the cusp of turning the corner and being frontline players, nationally known players.
Yes, sir.
What are you seeing in Khalid Kareem and Dalen Hayes that might make that statement true?
No, so Dalen a year ago when we got done with the season, Dalen has all kinds of talent, right? But he didn't use great technique, didn't use his hands to the effective level that he needed to. Now he dominated spring with the physicality, with his hands, with block destruction. So between him, Khalid, and Julian Okora, and really even Ade, I think you're going to see, you know, tons of production as it relates to quarterback pressures and along with sacks. So I think I'm very excited about that position.
Coach Elston, since we're at Football 101, let me ask a question for the average fan.
Yes, sir.
Jerry Tillery making the transition from the nose to defensive tackle, why is that going to be good for him and for your defense?
Because now he's on the edge of the guard. You know, he can use his athleticism. He's a little further away from the ball. There's a little more space. We can coordinate him and Dalen Hayes working together in different stunts and different games. Two extremely athletic guys, along with Julian Okora. Dalen and him will be split in time. So it's just a little more space for Jerry, who's a great athlete, to work, to get up the field, to get to the low shoulder of the quarterback and to pressure him. So I'm excited for Jerry there. There's a lot more one-on-one matchups at the three technique with the guard rather than the one technique over the center and center-guard combination blocks. So it should be a better position for him productively.
And there's nothing a quarterback hates more than pressure up the middle.
No doubt.
And that's where he can do some damage.
Right, and he's 6'6", so it's quite a force in there.
When do you think that Jerry kind of got it, what he needed to do to be an elite football player because he was around Sheldon. He saw what Sheldon was like.
Yep.
See, we're this
yeah,
is
he's
like
gonna talk about a baseball question. I know that.
but seriously, when did you say, man, Jerry's getting this? I feel like now he can kind of step into his potential.
Yeah. Well, I think that. So I think Jerry had a really good season last fall for him. I think that he made great strides and became a productive player. I do believe that his commitment right now is at an all-time high, and I believe that this coming fall he'll have an outstanding season. But I saw a change in him in the spring of last year. He came in every single day, was truly willing to take the coaching and understand what he needed to do to get better. And so I would say spring of last season.
Now, Coach, you're right. I mean, I'm looking around here, and I'm seeing all your defensive linemen who are out there at the softball game last night. So of your guys who were out there on the field, who did you think was the best ball player?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, it wasn't one of my guys. It was an offensive lineman. Alex Barrs impressed me.
He did look
playing
good, yeah.
Shortstop, had a couple nice plays on the infield, has a nice swing when he swings the ball. Micah Dutredway is a heck of an athlete, so he stuck out a little bit.
He caught a ball in right field.
He did. You know what? He flinched at the last second, so I was a little concerned. But he definitely showed some aggressiveness.
That's because you were yelling, catch it!
Yeah, exactly. I don't know any coaching points in softball, so I just started shouting out the simple things like, hit the ball, catch the ball, throw the ball.
That's right.
Call more strikes.
Yeah, there you go. How did you think your pitching debut went last night?
Last year I pitched for the first time, and I did a much better job than this year. This year was below average. Actually, a couple times the pitches went on the opposite side of the batter, which is not good. I understand that's not good.
Right.
I got a little nervous because I was concerned they were going to beam the ball back at me. And it happened one time, and I tried to use my bare hand, which was a mistake. I've got a bruise on my hand right now. But I think I did okay, you know, considering I'm not a very good pitcher.
What's important about June and July in terms of the development of not only the football team but your position group? What, when you come back in August and can watch them every day again, what do you want to have happen in June and July?
Well, what we can do is fine-tune, you know, everything about playing defensive line is technique. Now, obviously, you got to be very aggressive and very tough. And if you don't have those two things, you're not going to be a very good defensive lineman. But let's assume that we've recruited tough and physical guys. It's all about technique, using your hands, getting off blocks, and then creating pressure on pass. So all of that can be worked on in June and July. You can show them the fine detail of how it needs to be done because you're not worried about, you know, cramming for an exam like a Michigan game in September. You have some good time to sit down with a young player and show them video from the fall, video from the spring, and say, here's how it needs to be done. Here's how you're doing it. Let's bridge that gap.
Since we're football 101 right now, let's do defensive line 101, Mike, yep. Since you're the defensive line coach, yep. Obviously. So what is, if you were talking to a fan, what are maybe the one or two sort of most vital things about your defensive line if you were explaining it to a fan?
So college football these days has become a spread game where offenses spread you out from sideline to sideline. So what used to be when I played, like I was a linebacker, I'm 6'4", let's say 250 pounds. I'm not 250 now, I'm way bigger than that. But let's say that's what I played at.
Right.
Back then, everybody was a two-back offense. The fullback came and blocked you, and it was just a smash-mouth game. Now it's not that. Now it's all about your skill level, your ability to run, your conditioning. And then you have to, because they spread you out, you've got, if you put six guys in the box to stop the run, they're going to throw the ball on the perimeter. If you put five guys in the box to stop the perimeter run game or pass game, now they're going to run the ball. And offenses are sophisticated, and so defensive linemen have to be smart, and you have to be able to scheme different things, and if they do this, you got to do that. Rather than before, it just used to be come off the ball and smash somebody, and that's not the way defensive line is right now. It's a very sophisticated game, and so we have to recruit smart guys that can run, that are in great shape, and that are very, very athletic. So that's kind of the shift of what defensive line play is. But at the end of the day, if I'm a defensive lineman and I'm coming off the football, in football 101, D-line 101, if the guard who I'm lined up on goes to the left, guess where I have to go? To the left. If he goes to the right, I have to go to the right. And if he backs up like it's pass pro, then I have to go sack the quarterback. So, you know, it's pretty simple in that regard. But It is a very sophisticated game when it comes to game planning different offenses week in and week out.
You know, I'm sure when you're recruiting and you're looking at film and you see a Jadeveon Clowney, everybody knows he's going to be great.
Yes, sir.
How do you find the J.J. Watts, the Bradley Chubbs? What do you identify in a guy that's not a five-star where you say, I think this guy can turn into something?
Yeah, well, if you rewind the clock, when Brian Kelly and I and Jeff Quinn were at Central Michigan, we signed J.J. Watt.
Wow.
Okay, so J.J. Watt was a signee at the Cincinnati, at Central Michigan. Then we left, and then the next staff moved him over to, like, let's say, offensive tackle, I think it was. Then he transferred out of there and walked down at Wisconsin. What J.J.'s situation was, he was a slower-developing player that we continue to watch film on. Maybe Central Michigan and a few other MAC schools were his offers. We built a great relationship with him. And then at the end of the day, his senior year, I believe he was either sick or got an injury, and his recruitment never really took off at the level that it possibly should have had he played his senior year. But to me, what you need to do to find guys like that, diamonds in the rough that other guys are going to miss on and evaluate and move on from, is continue to watch them during the summer of their senior year and then watch their senior footage. Unfortunately for us and many schools at this level, the recruiting process has accelerated so fast that guys that are late bloomers are ending up at a Western Michigan or a Central Michigan, and they're as good of football players as Alabama's signing and that Notre Dame is signing and Ohio State's signing because they bloomed late. They had scholarships left for them. I mean, you look at the D-line now. I mean, we have one scholarship left for, you know, for the 2019 class. It's going fast, and it's not even the end of June yet. So, you know, the process has accelerated so fast, it hasn't allowed us to do what has made Brian Kelly and us successful over the years, which is continue to evaluate throughout the course of a senior year.
That is Mike Elston, associate head football coach of the Notre Dame football team, as well as defensive line coach, touching on a little bit of recruiting and that kind of thing. And Tyler James joins me for the second hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat. And we have that coming up after CBS Sports and the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Hour two coming up in just a little bit.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrews steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Budweiser's weekday sports beat rolls into the second hour, 6:07. I'm Sean Stiers, in for Darren Pritchett, who's got a little three-day weekend planned, and Brendan King has South Bend Cubs baseball coming up. Man, what about 40 minutes from now or so here on WSBT? He's in Dayton. Dayton Dragons. Cubs won last night and back at it again tonight. With me for the second hour, South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football recruiting insider, Tyler James. How are we doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Glad to be back. Haven't been in the studio in a while.
I know. I was trying to think. It's been, what, maybe a couple months or so?
A couple months, yeah, other than my Thursday spots for recruiting. But usually the summertime is when there's some time where some people are taking some time off. And
I was going to say,
I'm the prime fill-in guy.
Eric Hansen's taking off here for the month of July, so I'm sure we're going to see more of you around.
That's right.
All right, looking forward to that. And, well, let's jump right in. We got a lot of Notre Dame football to talk about. And another recruiting story popped up just after SportsBeat ended last night. Three-star running back Kyren Williams out of the state of Missouri committed to the Irish last night. And looking at your story at IndyInsider.com today, 5'10", 201 pounds. He came for the Virginia Tech game back in 2016. He participated in the Irish invasion last June. Then also was at Junior Day this past January, shortly after he got the offer from the Fighting Irish. He rushed for 119 or 119 times, 922 yards, 22 touchdowns, also 774 receiving yards and 12 touchdowns. So 34 total touchdowns last year, and also 37 tackles, 4 interceptions, and 3 sacks. 24/7 has him as the number 19 running back, while Rivals has him as the number 34 athlete. And Eric and I talked a little bit about him in the first hour, Tyler. This sounds like a really versatile guy who kind of fits more maybe in the mold of what Chip Long is looking for from running backs going forward.
Yeah, I think so. He's definitely a playmaker. Certainly the stats backed it up, and the film does as well. I think his height at 5'10 might be a little generous. He might not quite be at 5'10, but he's a guy that can make plays and is tough to tackle. And when he's playing some defense, he's a tough tackler too. So he's not afraid to be physical. He can break some tackles too. So I think do a little bit of everything. I think maybe more well-rounded of a back than the two guys in the last class with Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister. I see those as more kind of physical runners.
Yeah.
And Kyron being more of a polished guy, though he doesn't have the size of those guys. But so it makes sense that this is one of the guys that Chip Long and Autry Denson decided to pursue. Certainly, like you mentioned, all those visits, he was familiar with Notre Dame, made his official visit this past weekend, and so they were able to change sort of his plans. He was going to make some more visits. He told me last night that he wasn't going to actually come in until October was what his original timeline was, and after this past weekend's visit, he decided, okay, I know what, I've seen enough. I'm going to go ahead and commit to Notre Dame and become the first skill position player to commit to Notre Dame in terms of the offense. The other guys are all offensive linemen on the offensive side, so they had guys to block for him, so I imagine that made Notre Dame a little bit more attractive as well.
As much as he's visited Notre Dame already and is all in as he seems, has he really talked to other schools very much, or had he talked to other schools very much?
Yeah, he was talking to a number of different schools. Michigan, I think, was really pushing for him hard. Missouri, obviously, wanted to keep him in state. And Stanford was another school he had a lot of interest in. Michigan State, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa were other offers he had. I think it really came down to Notre Dame feeling like the place he wanted to be. He mentioned it felt like home, and he felt like he didn't need to see anything else. So he'd been other places, had a chance to compare what Notre Dame was like to other places. You like to see that when a guy commits, because it certainly decreases the chances of him maybe deciding later on, I want to check some other things out, when he's already been able to get out there and check some other places out and feel really good about where he wants to be.
So he was one of 8 official visitors the Irish hosted last weekend. And was Zeke Correll?
Zeke Correll was one of them as well, yes.
He's the other one who committed this week, the offensive lineman. So what do you think about where this class stands right now?
Yeah, it's in good shape. 15 commitments, and you mentioned Zeke Correll and Kyron Williams on official visits. 5 of those guys have that are in the class committed after official visits. So this is the first year that Notre Dame and any school has been allowed to host juniors for official visits and sort of sped up the recruiting calendar. Certainly a lot of guys would visit for unofficial visits, but now that schools can pay for these official visits, kids are taking advantage of them. Because they want to make early decisions, and that's worked well for Notre Dame, getting 5 of those 15 guys on their committed list from those official visits. They've hosted 13 official visits for guys that are being targeted, and so they've had those 5, so that's about a 40% commitment rate out of your official visits so far. So that's pretty good, and that's also, you got to take into account that 8 just happened this past weekend, so obviously they're not going to turn around all those guys really quick. Maybe some of those guys end up in the class as well. And they're going to host another official visitor this weekend, linebacker Tristan Sinclair. So Notre Dame has really adapted well to the new recruiting timeline and done a good job and put themselves in a good position. Their defense is really strong. The offensive line is certainly strong with 4 commitments, and all those guys I like a lot. And I think there's more work to do in terms of offensive skill position guys, and certainly more talent they can add on the defensive side. But you have to really like where they're at. They're a top 5 according to Rivals and 24/7 Sports. I think is number 3 by 24/7 Sports and number 4 by Rivals. So they're in the conversations with the best of the best classes in the country.
Well, and it seems like just with the new signing period. Last year we saw them get all those guys signed in December, and now they're doing really well again this cycle. It really seems like they've fully embraced this new thing, and they've kind of been kind of out front, it seems like, with this new recruiting period.
Absolutely, and part of their plan was, and some different schools have done different things, and I'm not familiar with every school, obviously, but I've heard that some schools were really against hosting early official visits because they wanted to wait to get kids on campus for games. But Notre Dame decided that they were willing to host kids for official visits if those kids were planning on making decisions before their senior seasons. And so most of these guys that come for official visits had actually been on campus before, so it wasn't like it was their one and only visit to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Had maybe been to games before. We mentioned Kyron Williams was back in 2016 and visited for a game. Zeke Correll had been to games before, too. So I think that helps. And so Notre Dame, I think, has played it well. It'll be interesting to see how that changes how things progress in the season if they don't have as big a visit weekends for official visitors because the class has begun to get so big. But they can obviously bring in guys for unofficial visits that are younger kids and constantly keep it moving like we were talking about off the air. The recruiting cycle is always moving, so there's always something to do and other guys to scout and other guys to gauge their interest.
All right, so another commitment for Notre Dame, Kyron Williams, three-star running back out of the state of Missouri and a multi-purpose type guy, maybe kind of along the lines of what we saw from Jafar Armstrong and Avery Davis this spring, that kind of athlete. So another commitment for the Fighting Irish. It is 6:15, Budweiser's weekday sports beat, along with Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Stiers. An NBA draft last night. We were talking before the show. I was actually watching at least a little bit last night. There wasn't, this time of year, there's not a whole lot on anyway.
Right, yeah.
I was interested. What always interests me with the NBA draft is basically what happened last night, because it's unlike the other drafts. Baseball, you can't start trading your picks
right
away. You've got to get them signed, and then they go play in your organization. NFL, really, with the exception of maybe like the Eli Manning, Philip Rivers thing, how long has that been? 15, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of day of the draft or, you know, right around the draft type trades.
They'll trade the picks, but they'll let the other team pick and then before they actually make the trades.
Exactly, exactly. So last night, see all the swapping going around. Trae Young gets drafted by Dallas, ends up getting traded to Atlanta. We'll get to the other big trade here in a second, but the Chicago Bulls, they went with Wendell Carter Jr. at number 7 overall. He averaged 13.5 points and a little over 9 rebounds. 6'10", hit 19 three-pointers last year, and he's a front-line guy, but they also think maybe they can stretch the floor with him, and he looked like he's kind of trimmed up a little bit since the end of his college time. And you're a Bulls follower. So
yes.
What did you think about what they did? And they also got Chandler Hutchinson, a shooting guard from Boise State in the first round.
I think it makes sense with the Carter pick. I think it was a very safe pick. That seemed to be sort of the consensus. He doesn't seem to be a guy that's not going to be able to play. He's going to be a competent big man that you can rely on. He might not be certainly a star player. Which could be an issue, could not be an issue. It just depends on the development of their other players. I think they maybe rely on other guys, especially Lauri Markkanen, to be their star of their team. But we'll see how that plays out. I think anytime you can get a guy with size that can also move pretty well, I think it's a good move. I think I don't feel like I have a total grasp on what he can and can't do. I think because he played next to Marvin Bagley, it was a little bit hard to tell exactly his full skill set. And certainly I'm not a guy that's watching off-season workouts or anything like that. But that's only what I get to do with recruiting.
Oh, that's Tom Noy.
Yeah, we asked Tom Noy. So, but I like it. And then with Chandler Hutchinson, like you mentioned, from Boise State, I think that's a bit of a position of need. I think he's going to need to be able to hit some outside shots. I think certainly you want a guy at that position that can defend well and hit threes, and we'll see if he's up to the task there. I think they're looking for the guys. I think they probably feel good about where they're at with their guards with Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn, but certainly get some help at forward. And I'm interested to see how much Wendell Carter plays some center. I think just because of the way basketball is played now, he's probably as much of a center as he is a power forward There aren't that many true centers left.
What do you think about the fact, I saw this Q&A with Fred Hoiberg before the draft yesterday, and they were asking him, they basically said, look, you went all in, the Bulls as an organization, you went all in basically on losing this year, and as it turned out, you didn't even get a top three pick. They still picked seventh, but it's It's those top two or three guys that tend to be the big difference makers. So what do you think about that as someone who follows the Bulls? And even as bad as they were last year, they still didn't end up as high as they were hoping.
Yeah, I think that's a little frustrating. But I think it's understandable in certain ways because I think they did get a good sense of what Zach LaVine can do, what Chris Dunn can do, what Lauri Markkanen can do. And so I think you were going to need to get a sense for that at some point. So, but I was fully expecting it to be much worse. And I told you before the show that I didn't even watch a single full game all season. I consider myself a pretty big Bulls fan, but I just wasn't that into watching this group of players kind of play and knowing that they're trying to lose for the most part. So, yeah. I would tune in to see some guys every once in a while and form a little bit of opinions, but I think it's going to be kind of a long process. Certainly, as a White Sox fan, dealing with that with the baseball team as well. So, but I think it is a little disappointing that, and it kind of seemed like number seven was sort of the line of maybe guys that if you had the fifth or sixth pick, you would get more of a top line guy than you would at number seven. At seven was the Wendell Carter, and you didn't necessarily get maybe a top line guy, but a guy that you were going to be able to rely on.
Were you hoping at all that maybe Trae Young fell down there?
I was a little iffy on Trae Young. I'm not really sure.
I'm still not sure about him either.
How his career would play out. And I know Michael Porter Jr. was another guy that fell that people thought would go higher. And I'm glad the Bulls kind of stayed away from that. I felt like they're not in a position to take a risk on a guy that has health issues. So I think they made a good decision there. But it's going to be interesting to see how the draft plans out there, because there's always a few guys past the top tier guys that everyone expects to be good that end up being good and sometimes are better than those top tier guys. And maybe the Bulls ended up with one of them. We'll have to wait and see.
The other trade, so again, Trae Young, he got drafted fifth by Dallas. They ended up getting swapped for the third pick to Atlanta. But the other one that I think surprised everybody is Mikal Bridges, the Villanova guard. He's a kid. He grew up in Philadelphia, played high school basketball in Philadelphia, played collegiately at Villanova. His mom works for the Philadelphia 76ers. He gets picked 10th overall by the Philadelphia 76ers. So it sounds like this great story, and he's doing this press conference afterwards, and he's talking about how great it is that he's going to be able to stay in Philly. And then while he's doing this press conference, he sort of gets pulled aside, I think, and it turns out Philadelphia traded him to the Phoenix Suns for Zaire Smith.
Yeah, that's one of the things with the NBA draft. You always see those guys that end up there taking pictures and smiling, doing interviews and hats for teams that they're not actually going to end up playing for. It's kind of awkward in the way that works. You think someone would tip him off to that, but I don't know how you tip him off without someone else knowing, and you got to figure out you want to be able to make that trade when you want to. So it's certainly a tough situation that I imagine the mom was probably a little upset about that.
Let's say if you're the mom now, how do you feel about that? Because you're sitting there, it's like, all right, my guys, they drafted my boy, and now they traded
drafted him just to trade him.
Do you ask to go to work for the Phoenix Suns now?
Well, maybe it's just a sign that
trade her rights too.
That they thought he was so valuable that they could get even more for him. So man, who knows?
That's got to be tough though, as the mom now. I mean, it's a great job and everything, but
yeah,
you're gonna keep going to work when your son was drafted and then they said,
yeah, well, I wonder what Phoenix is willing to trade for his mom.
Yeah, that's right. Now, two guys who didn't get picked, Matt Farrell and Bonzi Colson, and we thought going into the last basketball season that this was going to be really their year, and unfortunately injuries kind of derailed a lot. But Farrell has signed to play this summer with the Miami Heat. He averaged a little over 16 points and 5 assists, making 37% of his three-pointers for the Irish this year. The Heat are going to play in Sacramento July 2nd and in Las Vegas when they do the league out there July 6th through the 17th. So still some really good opportunity for Farrell, even though he didn't get drafted. And the Heat didn't have any picks either. So,
right.
So they signed him, and the most important thing about the summer league now is that even if he doesn't end up signing with the Heat, he gets in front of all these other
absolutely
teams
against some talented players.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so I you kind of hope that he's able to go out there and get a chance to play. I think Matt Farrell seems like the kind of guy that performs best in game situations than probably in drills, I would think. That he's not a guy that's going to wow you in workouts or anything like that, but yeah. I think when he gets on the court and has a very good sense for the game and can really show that in a setting like Summer League. So you hope for him that he can take advantage of that opportunity. Certainly Miami isn't afraid to give guys chances, and so we'll see how that plays out. And then also with Bonzi Colson going undrafted, you hope that he most importantly can get healthy and then be able to prove that and see what happens from there.
Bonzi missed 15 games, of course, breaking his foot twice, including in the last game of the season against Penn State in the NIT, and so he's still recovering. That walking boot is off and everything, but he averaged just under 20 points, 10 rebounds per game, so hopefully things work out for him and he's able to recover and find a spot of his own someplace down the line. We will see how that works out. It is 25 minutes after 6 o'clock. We have South Bend Cubs baseball coming up in about 20 minutes or so here on WSBT. We will take a timeout when we come back. Got a little rapid fire to go for you, so we will do that when we return. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is time right now for rapid fire. It is brought to you by the Blackthorn card, Blackthorn Golf on WSBT, along with Tyler James, South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame football recruiting insider. I've got so many sheets here, Tyler. I'm shuffling them all around. Okay.
You're doing all the hard work, Sean.
It's like, man, whatever. I'm coming and going over here. So let's start with the first question for you. If you could invest, I've asked this of just about everybody else on the show so far, so I want to get what you would say as well. If you could invest in one offensive and one defensive Notre Dame football player, like a stock, for this season, so from the start of the season or even where we are right now to the end of the season, who would those players be?
Well, I'm a buy low kind of guy, so right. I will go with a guy like Jafar Armstrong on offense.
Okay.
I think he has a really versatile skill set that I think Notre Dame can use in a number of ways, and I imagine him getting a lot of carries this season and making some catches out of the backfield, so I think he's who I am looking to as a guy to kind of have a breakout year. And then on defense, I'm going to go with Houston Griffith, just a true freshman, but I think he has a real chance to be a significant contributor in his first year in South Bend, and I really like what he's able to do. I always thought that he would be a better safety than a corner, and it as spring football progressed, they started him at corner and moved him to safety, and I think he has a real shot of playing significant time at safety as a freshman.
My offensive guy is Avery Davis,
okay,
for essentially for a lot of the same reasons you're saying,
right,
Jafar Armstrong. So between those two, it was kind of hard to figure out, I thought, watching the spring. Do you think that Armstrong maybe ends up being the one who gets a little bit more of the workload?
I think that Jafar will get more carries than Avery. I'm a little skeptical about Avery as more of a running back. I think he could do like some jet sweeps and stuff like that.
True.
I think Jafar could just take a handoff from the backfield, where I'm not sure Avery would be as prepared to do that. And I'm interested to see. I think Jafar certainly played a wide receiver in high school, so I think he should be a better receiver than Avery. But Avery looked good. If you get him in the open field, he can make some plays. So I think, I don't know that they're necessarily going to have to be either one or the other beats them out. I think they both can be used in certain ways to be weapons for this offense.
Exactly. And I like your pick of Houston Griffith as well. On the defense, I went with Jordan Genmark Heath, who moves from safety up to linebacker. And he didn't see a lot of time there, but just the time that he was there in the spring, I thought he looked really good. And when you look at the depth concerns there, because the front line with Coney and Tranquil is really good, but there's got to be at least one other guy who's going to contribute there with the linebacking core. So I think that Genmark Heath, there's so much, he's so athletic and everything else. And he just seemed to grasp it so quickly that I think there's a ton of upside there.
Yeah, he looks like a natural fit there, and Clark Lee, I think, wants to have backups at both Mike and the Buck linebacker, and if Jonathan Jones and Jordan Genmark Heath can be those guys, I think we'll see a lot of them on the field as well.
Right, okay. Now, here's one that kind of pops up maybe every 5-6 months or so. This one specific, Brett Favre has his name attached to it this time, citing concerns about the risk of concussions. Favre says he doesn't think that kids should play tackle football before the age of 10. So you're a guy who played in high school, played in college as well. So what do you think about it, Tyler?
I tend to agree. I only played 1 year of Pop Warner football before middle school. I played 6th, 7th, and 8th grade.
Okay.
And I played up until my freshman year of college and then stopped playing because of knee injuries. But I think that I just don't know how much you benefit from it as a football player trying to become a better football player. I don't know that you're really getting much of that advancement before the age of 12 that you couldn't get without pads. I think you could do that in certainly 7-on-7 situations. Now, certainly the reason I only played Pop Warner 1 year is because I was too big and they didn't let the kids my size play in my age group. So I had to wait till 6th grade. But I think by the time middle school came around, I was able to progress and become a successful high school football player. So I think that I tend to agree. I'm curious to see how that kind of develops the more we learn about when you should be able to do that and the effects of hitting at an early age when it comes to long-term concussion problems.
Yeah, and that's one of the things is because the CTE and it, everything that we are just starting to know about it, we're just starting to know.
I mean, right.
We don't have data that goes back and tracks sure. these kids playing
yeah.
when they're that young. So we really don't know the effect, and I agree with what you're saying. There was a caller on the Dan Patrick Show who was talking about it today. He said that he was a youth coach in Tennessee. His son started playing when he was 4 years old. And like a lot of youth leagues, he was one of the coaches for the mm-hmm. team. And a lot of the sure. dads end up being the coaches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they never got any formal training
right.
on here's how you need to be teaching tackling and those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
it all falls back to what these guys learned when they were young.
Right.
And a lot of that is
it's not what you want to be doing these days. Yeah.
Right. And I just... Look, having had a son who did the same, he grew up playing Pop Warner in high school and played at small college too. And I just, one of the things that always struck me is I always felt like the safety, you don't want referees out on the field throwing flags on every, you know, maybe offsides or holding
right.
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But the safety stuff is what you need to really be a stickler for. Because just like whether it's table manners or doing your homework, whatever, you need to get that in them. You need to start
sure.
teaching them young so that it becomes a habit. And,
right.
I just felt like if you would see guys who didn't want to throw a flag because they'd say, well, it wasn't, he didn't mean to do it and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But I think if you make that flag a deterrent from an early age,
sure.
then they're going to get away from it. And I just don't think that there's enough of that. And I've said this before, I grew up in a community where we had a really good high school football program,
mm-hmm.
but no one, it was flag football until you were in the 8th grade. So
okay.
there was no tackle football. So grew up playing flag football, and then high school football was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to another community, actually in middle school, where they grew up playing, I think it was YMCA tackle football
sure.
and all that, and the high school football program stunk.
yeah.
So it's like, if you just look at, again, it's a small size, but there's
right.
just those two things alone kind of.
You're not giving yourself that much of an advantage.
Yeah, that's right, because I still think that the youth sports, one of the most important things, one is the activity, two is the teamwork and learning how to work together and do
right.
all those kind of things, and I think you can teach that in a flag football setting. And like ours wasn't, it's not the adult flag football where you got three guys on the line and
right,
everyone's
yeah,
eligible
yeah,
for
sure,
a pass.
Yeah.
It was still within the actual rules of football.
Okay.
Where you had two guards, two tackles,
yeah.
a center, and not everyone was eligible. You know, so it was regular football. It's
okay.
just that you were playing flag instead of tackles.
Sure.
I think you can get as much out of that, teaching them how to play football and the teamwork and the whole thing,
right.
as with playing tackle, and it's a lot more safe, I think.
All right, yeah, I tend to agree.
That's what I've kind of always – and I mean, even – you know, and there's also, you know, kind of that line of think, well, they're young kids and they're, you know, they're not delivering big blows and all that. But I always think about, do you remember Brian Roberts who played second base for the Orioles?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He got a concussion just sliding into second base.
Right.
So it's not always just big blows
right.
that cause it.
Yeah, you don't have to hit something really hard or someone really hard to hit you in order to get a concussion.
Yep, exactly. Okay, baseball question for you. And now your team, the White Sox, and my team, the Royals, in the same division, they're kind of in the same position right now because they're both not very good at all. And I saw this. Kansas City general manager Dayton Moore says he won't trade Mike Moustakas, the third baseman, because he says Kansas City fans enjoy watching him play. So do you think that is enough? Your fans like watching him play. Is that enough reason not to get something for a player who they're most likely going to lose after this season to free agency?
I think it all depends on what you're getting back. I think I wonder if they're not getting as much back as they would like to for him, and that's part of the reason, even though that they probably wouldn't admit that publicly.
Could be, because the third base market, as Moustakas found out last year, wasn't very good.
Right. So if you're not going to get players back that are worth it, I think there's a value in keeping that player. I think there's a value in him teaching other guys, being a leader in that team that for the young guys that'll be there in the future. And but I also think it's important to discuss that with the player. If Moustakas wants to leave, I think that maybe you lean towards trading him in that case. So I think it's tough to kind of to figure that all out. I think it's similar with the White Sox. Jose Abreu is a guy that I think they could get some value for, but they seem to want him to be around some of the younger players, and they have younger Cuban players that he can relate to and kind of guide through their system. So I think it seems like they're in the same boat where they want to hang on to him rather than trade him.
And that was, I was going to spring that one on you as well. And I don't know if that's necessarily their reason for keeping him, but yeah. And I guess, like, from Dayton Moore's perspective, he's kind of, it seems like he's kind of, well, we owe it to our fans because we stink.
Right.
And it, you know, no, if they like him that much, are they going to sell fewer tickets?
Yeah.
Already selling
I don't think that many fans are going to come just to see one guy play. Because, I mean, the game's not going to be fun if it's just, you're waiting for one batter to come up every three innings, you know?
That's right. But, I think they're running a team that's kind of, competitively, they're not in very good shape. They already did a bad contract with Alex Gordon a few years ago. They're only 3 years removed from
winning the championship. Right, their downhill trend has gone fast.
And this is where they are. Yeah. And I think you make good points, though, about what you're going to get in return. If you can get something good in return, I think you owe it to yourself and your fans for the future to make that deal rather than just hold on for right now.
Absolutely, because the 6 months that you're, or 3 months that you're saving him for, isn't necessarily going to be worth it when you can get a guy that can play for a few more years.
Exactly. Okay, I think we've got a chance to get one more question in here before we take a break and then turn it over to Brendan King for the pregame show, the South Bend Cubs. This is Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher Stephen Brault singing the national anthem before a Pirates game this week.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming.
I have to say, I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I mean, I guess you wouldn't insist on singing the anthem if you didn't think you were pretty good.
That's true, yeah. Yeah. He probably wasn't too nervous about it, because I hadn't heard this before now, and I was expecting much worse.
Were you?
Yes.
So he did a pretty good job. So now, in the meantime, so that's Stephen Brault, Pirates pitcher, singing the national anthem. In the meantime, earlier this week, Andrew McLovin-Perloff of the Dan Patrick Show was trying to catch some passes from Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott, and he did it horribly. And Prescott was winging him from maybe 12 to 15 yards. So McLovin's hands were like bricks. Now, I know you were an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I didn't catch any passes.
My question is, which would you rather do? Try to sing the anthem in public like that, or catch passes at short distance from an NFL quarterback?
I think I would go with the catching in the pass. I think even though I was never a receiver or very good at catching, I think I could at least not be terribly embarrassing. I feel like I'm not a good singer, and I feel like that's something that just never leaves you. Like, people will be bringing that up for years.
That's it right there.
The video clip will be out there forever. Seeing bad, it just seems to haunt you worse than just being a poor athlete.
That's right. And McLovin, back before the Super Bowl, when they were in Minnesota, they had like Aaron Rodgers, Eli Manning, Case Keenum, all these quarterbacks. They were all zipping him at him. He would put a helmet on, and they would all just clank off his hands.
Oh, if you got a helmet on, you're not worried about a face injury. You should be good to go.
That's
do
right.
that all day.
That's right. But I would rather do that as well. Because, especially, like you said, now with viral videos, YouTube, and everything else, It's going to be out there forever.
Yep.
If you try to sing and sound horrible, which it sounds like we would both sound horrible. I can speak for myself.
Yes, anyway. I agree.
And I know I would. All right. Budweiser's weekday sports beat. And by the way, it's now 11-1. The
Oakland A's. Oh, jeez. It's only getting worse. Glad I'm not watching it.
That's right. And you don't have to. Now, we are brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Goshen Heart and Vascular and by Blackthorn Golf Club. Budweiser's weekday sports beat. Tyler James, thanks for coming in tonight.
Absolutely.
And we will see you soon once the month of July rolls around and Eric Hansen's out. All right. South Bend Tribune, Indy Football Insider, Tyler James. We'll take a time out when we come back. South Bend Cubs pregame begins. Brendan King will have the call from Dayton, Ohio. The South Bend Cubs and the Dayton Dragons. That is next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.